From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Well, it's time to say thank you again as these ratings continue to roll in Boston, number one on WRKO. Thank you so much. Detroit, CKLW, number two. We were 18 just a few months ago on our Windsor affiliate there into the Detroit market. San Diego, Cogo, number one. Hartford, WTIC, number one yesterday. New York, L.A., Chicago, all number one. I'll do this for a couple more days. There are just so many markets. Well, here's some of the news of the day. Something we have been talking about on Coast to Coast for many years. Now the FDA is getting involved. Young adults beginning treatment with antidepressants should be warned about an increased risk of suicidal thoughts and behavior. What took them so long? This, according to U.S. government health officials, the FDA proposed labeling changes that would expand a warning now on the antidepressants. The current language applies only to children and adolescents. The expanded warning would apply to adults 18 to 24 during the first month or two of treatment with the drugs. Well, you may have already eaten chickens that were fed tainted ingredients from China, tainted with that same kind of junk that was in the recalled pet food, according to federal officials, though they say the threat to us is minimal. The announcement came after an investigation of chicken farms in Indiana found that 38 of the facilities had been contaminated with this feed that was given to poultry raised for human consumption, and that 2.5 million to 3 million people ate them. The officials added that they expect to discover that chickens on possibly hundreds of farms in other states were also given tainted feed. Last week, as part of its investigation into the nationwide pet food recall, the FDA ordered that all vegetable protein imports from China used in human and animal food be detained. Dr. Robin Falkov on the line with us. Robin, how serious a story is this?
Hi, George. I think this is very serious, and people have to recognize that a lot of these stories don't make it into the media. Back on the 10th of April, there was a report in Science Daily about Roxarsone, an arsenic-based additive that was in chicken feed.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear about it?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Well, I hope a lot of other people heard about it as well, because these dominoes are sure stacking up. And people have to really pay attention. They have to demand that something is done, and the only way they can do that is by contacting their representatives.
You know, it is deplorable that this could happen. They say that it is a minimal problem to humans. Is that true?
It depends upon the human. It depends upon their immune system. You have many people who are immune compromised, and some poisons will be stored and need to be broken down in the liver, and this could be the straw that breaks the camel's back and can kill someone, and they might not even have a clear understanding of what the cause of death is.
You know, it's amazing, Robin. Some people just wake up and they feel blah. They don't know why. I'm beginning to wonder, it could be some of the things they eat or the environment that's affecting them.
Most assuredly. I mean, we are barraged on every level, from our food to the pollution to the just contaminants in our homes. I mean, the cleaners that are used to clean floors, clean wood, clean everything, they're very toxic.
Give us a quick update on the efforts to make vitamins and herbs all under an umbrella of pharmaceutical prescriptions. What's going on there?
Okay, we have another full day to get our calls in on Senate Bill 1082. And I have the updates for this information on my site. There is a link to the Life Extension Foundation organization group, their website. They have a bill link where your comments will go directly to your representatives. And this bill was sponsored by Edward Kennedy and Senator Enzi. And, I mean, it's just insane. What it is doing is giving the FDA more power, more funding, and they're going to put a drug approval group inside the FDA. So we have the fox guarding the hen house.
Amazing. Robin, thanks for the updates. Appreciate it. It's Dr. Robin Falco. A federal judge has dismissed a lawsuit that had been brought by a doctor who accused the KFC fast foods restaurant chain of failing to tell customers that it used trans fats to fry its chicken. U.S. District Judge James Robertson in Washington said Dr. Arthur Holte could not show that he was harmed by KFC's use of the artery-clogging fats. Well, finally, more and more mainstream media beginning to pick up on the incredible disappearing honeybee story, this time Fox News onto it. Unless someone or something stops it soon, they say, the mysterious killer that is wiping out many of the nation's honeybees could have a devastating effect on America's dinner plate, perhaps even reducing us to a glorified bread and water diet. I'm not kidding. Honeybees just don't make honey. They pollinate more than 90 of the tastiest flowering crops that we have. Apples, nuts, avocados, cucumbers, soybeans, asparagus, broccoli. It goes on and on and on. In fact, about one-third of the human diet comes from the insect-pollinated plants, and the honeybee is responsible for 80% of that pollination. If the collapse worsens, we could up being stuck with grains and water, according to Kevin Hackett, the national program leader for the USDA's Bee and Pollinization Program. While not all scientists foresee a food crisis, noting that large-scale bee die-offs have happened before, this one seems particularly baffling and alarming. In Alabama, a freight train carrying segments of the space shuttle solid rocket boosters derailed after a bridge collapsed. According to authorities, six people on the train injured. NASA said that they're not sure how much of the equipment was damaged. The shuttle's twin boosters are 150 feet tall and consist of four propellant segments. And also, scientists here say that initial data from a new way of scanning Mars has shown up to half of the red planet's surface may contain ice. The new method of scanning for water offers vastly more accurate readings than before. Richard C. Hoagland, our science advisor, head of the EnterpriseMission.com, has been monitoring the story of the freight train with the shuttle parts derailing, and also this story about Mars having much more ice than NASA had thought. Hey, Richard, how are you?
Good evening, George. It's kind of a busy night here at Enterprise.
Oh, it does not stop. Now, the shuttle problem with this derailed train, is that going to cause a problem? NASA says no, but who knows?
This will have no impact on the June 8th launch of the next space shuttle, because they're usually several missions ahead. They ship these things by train from Utah down to the Cape. It takes about a week for this special train to make the trip, and unfortunately, a whole trestle collapsed under this train, and one of the boosters rolled off. There are eight segments. It's just a good thing that there was no fire, because although this propellant can't explode, it could cause one heck of a blaze. And so they were lucky here, and they'll probably be sending all the segments back to Utah to be checked out of the factory, but it will have no immediate impact.
It's just black cloud, though, Richard, around the shuttle program.
Well, because the shuttle is obsolete. It needs to be put to bed. We need to get on with the rest of the program and do a real space program. And, of course, you and I have discussed this many times, and we will discuss it in future. And one thing I do want to say in that regard is that NASA just took this recent image, the MRO image of the face on Mars.
Yes.
We have found some astonishing, amazing things. And I'm in the middle of preparing a book, so I haven't been able to put up the analysis in Enterprise. When I get it ready, I'm going to give you a high sign.
Okay.
And we'll do a show, because I have some things that are going to knock people's socks off. We have another major set of areas where we turn out to be right.
I love it. And quick comment on the red planet having more ice than they thought.
We have said this all along. If you had an enormous planetary catastrophe, as NASA and I and Tom Van Flandern have all agreed, and it used to have a lot more water than it seems to now, the question has always been, where did all the water go? It sloshed, it created mud, the mud froze, and it's in the regolith all over the planet, so I'm not surprised that NASA's finally caught up to where we were several years ago.
Very good. Richard, thank you so much. Richard C. Hoagland, head of the EnterpriseMission.com. Here's a dog story for you. A little Jack Russell Terrier named George, who stood like a giant against two marauding pit bulls, gave his own life to save five kids from the steel-trapped jaws and razor-sharp teeth of the attack machines. The local officials say it's also a story about the people who train the pit bulls to kill. That's the big problem. And who may have fed the animals methamphetamines to make them even more deadly. The tragedy unfolded on New Zealand's North Island, where a group of children and the dog George were walking back from a trip to the candy store. Out of nowhere, according to the children, two pit bulls lunged at them. One of the kids, an 11-year-old named Richard, told a local paper that George never backed down against the pit bulls, refusing to let them get at his little brother, a 4-year-old. He said George tried to protect us by barking and rushing at them. It was too late, however, to save the little 9-year-old terrier. His wounds were the worst a vet had ever seen. They had to put him down. Well, they say in Iran, a kiss is just a kiss, unless you're the president of Iran. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, president of the Islamic country, apparently rounded up hundreds of women for not properly covering up last week. He is now accused of indecency for publicly embracing and kissing the hand of a former school teacher. Ahmadinejad was photographed and filmed bowing to kiss the elderly woman's gloved hand and hugging her at a ceremony ahead of Iran's Teachers' Day, prompting charges of indecency by the influential and hardline Islamic newspaper Hezbollah. Critics say that he violated law, which forbids a man to have physical contact with a woman with whom he is not related. Penalties vary for such an offense there, ranging from stoning him to death, unless depending on whether the man or woman is married. He is married and has two sons and daughters. A man in the United States who was stabbed 9 times told police he couldn't identify his assailants because he slept through the entire thing. The police chief, Tom Williams, out there investigating the incident, which occurred in the wee hours, says that the 23-year-old victim told the officers he slept through the attack. How can you sleep through an attack when you're stabbed 9 times? He only became aware of the injuries when his girlfriend saw he was covered in blood and brought them to his attention. And a judge in Washington, D.C. is suing a cleaners because of a $10 dry cleaning bill for a pair of trousers. Trousers were lost. They were his prized pants. He wanted to wear them to his first day of court. He is suing for $67 million, if you can believe that. And British scientists say artificial goo, which is in your nose most of the time, I kid you not, produced a dramatic improvement in the range of smells detected by an artificial nose. A natural nose uses over 100 million specialized receptors. But electronic noses used in a number of commercial settings often have fewer than 50 sensors. A team of scientists say the natural nose's mucus enhances our sense of smell and found a way to replicate it in electronic devices. They coated a channel of the sensor used by an electronic nose with a mix of polymers that mimics the mucus in the natural nose. The team found the artificial mucus substantially improved the performance of their electronic nose, allowing it to tell apart similar smells such as milk and banana. Now, we're talking about high technology, so in a moment we're going to bring in our guest tonight, Jan Newcomb Hodges, right here on Coast to Coast AM. It's going to be an incredible night here on Coast to Coast. Jan Hodges has been one of the foremost leaders in the development and integration of new technology and innovations for decades, beginning with his founding of Hodges Robotics. And we're going to talk tonight about incredible technology that all of us will face in the future with our guest, Jan Newcomb Hodges, right now on Coast to Coast AM. Jan, welcome to the program. How are you?
Hey, George. Great. Good to be talking with you again.
Likewise, and we're looking forward to this. Technology, Jan, just never stops. It just keeps moving ahead. That story I just had before you came on.
Yeah, about a great thing to follow, the mucus story.
Yeah, the mucus story, the artificial mucus story. I mean, how do they come up with this stuff?
We have to go back to the basic sensors in our skin itself. You know, when you touch a hot item and a cold item, our sensors in our skin can detect, let's say, the cold quicker than we can the hot. That's why we can actually get burned very easily, because there's probably, let's do a number here. Let's say there's 10 sensors in our skin that detect cold and only 5 that detect hot.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Okay, so we'll sit there a while waiting for all these 5 sensors to kick in. In the meantime, we're getting burned. Okay, so we go up to the nose section here. We have these sensors in our noses, of which we have, let's say, on another scale, we have 10 and a dog has 100, to where we're able to pick up these olfactory sensor particles coming in. We try to increase our senses through electronic means. We've always tried to do that. We only have 5 senses. So ever since the beginning of innovation technology, we've tried to develop devices that would enhance our senses, such as our vision, our hearing, our speaking, our all this stuff. So we have amplifiers, we have telescopes, you know, it just keeps going on. So now they're starting to work on the olfactory sensors. So we're taking essentially what dogs have, the capability of smelling, which is 100 times more than us, sometimes more, and recreating that with sensors. And different sensors picking up different types of olfactory particles.
How close are we, Jan, to the Jetsons, where we're going to have that kind of technology all over the place?
Oh, dude, I'm still waiting for my jetpack. we're close to a lot of things. I have a top 10 list that I keep updating every month by scanning all the technologies that are out there.
Is it a wish list or something that's going to happen?
It's my wish list, but as I keep adding things to it, I'm beginning to get timelines.
Okay.
And a lot of things are taking place even today that I'm really amazed with. It's, you know, we could go down all these 10 items.
Let's go through them, and then we'll break them all down throughout the evening tonight.
Okay.
And, you know, we'll talk about their possibilities and how soon you think they might be put into effect. And will these top 10 future technologies, will they change us dramatically?
On an individual scale, yes. On a worldwide scale, a couple of them could. On a future of humanity itself, yes. a lot of the things that we essentially invent are what I call neat things, okay? It's a new MP3 player, a new flat-screen TV. These are neat things.
Right.
What I'm focusing on are things that will actually help advance the individual and humanity. And a lot of this stuff, as we go through it, we start thinking back, going, you know, didn't I see this in Star Trek?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where the heck did this come from? And as we move back through our invention innovation days, we begin to find that most of the time, new ideas come from science fiction writers, you know, people thinking outside the box, coming up with little stories. And that essentially stirs the juices in the innovators and the inventors, to where they say, you know, I think I can do that, or you know, there's a way we could probably do that. So it kind of directs our thinking. It's our muse for scientist inventors.
Well, in these science fiction writers that were able to develop these futuristic ideas that 10, 20, 30, 40 years later come true, they've done it, because I've talked to several of them, Jan, they've done it a couple ways. One is they're very intuitive. I mean, they've got a vision of the future far greater than maybe even some practical scientists. And the other thing they do is they do a lot of research and homework. So what they'll do is they'll pick up, for example, your book, and you pronounce that what? Tamashi?
Tamashi.
Tamashi. Yeah. The Primer for Tomorrow. They'll pick up something like that and read about it and learn about what could happen 20, 30, 40 years out. And then they mix it into their science fiction story. So they do it pretty brilliantly, don't they?
Yes, they do. There's two different ways of this mindset. One is the vision, as you mentioned, being a visionary. And the other is perception. Perceptionalizing, okay? It's where they can perceive all the various components and how they're going to be plugged together. A visionary essentially looks at a concept, okay, like a flying car. and the perceptualized people look at all the components that would make that up. So I would put the visualization portion into the writing, and I would put the people that read this perceive it, and they go, wow, you know, I could do that because I got this thing laying in the garage, and I know my friend down the street's got this other thing. If I can plug these things together, you know, I can create this. So it's a great mindset.
All right, stay with us, Jan. We're going to take this quick break. We'll be right back with you. We'll go through your top 10 future technology wish items. I bet you want to guess what they're like. I've got the list right here. I can see what he's got. I'll be back. Pick up the After Dark newsletter and get the two classic CDs, the interviews that I did years ago with the late Father Malachi Martin. Call 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505. Or you can go online at coast2coastam.com. And welcome back to Coast, Jan Hodges, our guest tonight. Jan, let's go through your top 10 list, and then we'll go back and analyze each one of them, okay?
All right. I put this first one. I'm going to go from the bottom to the top. So.
And now, when you say the bottom of the top, this is based on your preference?
Yeah, let's just say my preference for now.
Okay.
We'll get about 600,000 emails tonight on everybody else's preference, but that's good because I like to compile these things.
Okay.
Okay, number 10. I put this on there because it's kind of far-fetched, and I don't see any real work being done at the moment on it. I put that as the time machine.
The time machine.
Okay.
All right.
Number 9 is basically, I call it, I want a new bot. It's the future robotics in living computers.
Okay.
All right. Number 8, what everybody would love to see, flying cars. And we'll put jetpacks in there, too.
And they're working on that. We'll talk about that in a second.
Number 7, personal protection. Okay.
All right.
Number 6, oh, this is a good one, the fountain of youth.
Gosh, I would move that almost up to the top. Well, that is a good one. But, hey, that's your preference.
All right. Let's see here. Number 4.
What happened to 5?
Oh, I'm sorry. Number 5, cures for whatever ails you.
Uh-huh.
All right. Number 4, the universal communicator.
What would that be?
Let's say we have a phone, a babblefish type device that when we talk into it to our friends in other countries, we have a slight time delay and it comes back in our language.
Fascinating.
Okay. Or we can actually have the little device sitting on the table, plugged into our ear, and as we talk back and forth, we're both sharing the same earpiece or the same device with two earpieces, and we're translating. It's the old babblefish thing.
How about a communicator that talks for us and we don't even have to talk? Just turn it on. You want to talk to your friend, hit a button and leave. Let the computer do it.
Well, actually, they actually have little devices now, hearing aids that you can plug them in. And there's a 10-second delay. It records 10 seconds of voice and plays it back. So you always have a 10-second delay. So you can hear out of one ear, and if you miss something, you listen closely in the other ear, and you can hear it. But that's really confusing.
All right, number 3.
All right, replicator technology.
What is that?
All right, and we'll go back to the old Star Trek thing where you walk up and you say, I want Earl Grey tea hot, and out it comes.
Uh-huh, okay.
All right. And it goes even farther than that. Number 2, the transporter.
Of course.
Of course. Number 1, I put this number 1 because of what we're going through today all over the world. Free energy, radiant power systems, biofuels, on and on and on. Energy systems.
All right, let's go back to the beginning. Number 10.
Okay.
The time machine. It is being worked on in some respects, Jan. Scientists are starting to push particle accelerators, you know, moving things at the nanoseconds into the future. I don't think they think they can go to the past, but you're right. It's going to take a long time to get the apparatus to work.
Well, what they are dealing with, their biggest stumbling block here is the laws of physics are symmetrical. Like most believe if there's a black hole on the other side, there's probably a white hole. What we can't quite figure out yet is the laws of time. Okay, is it symmetrical? Is it the same forward as backwards? Is it shorter? Is it longer? The only way we can actually deal with that is on the old concept, if we have a physical connection, data can be passed. No different than a phone line or a computer hooked up to a DSL network.
Well, regardless of when, do you think a time machine is achievable? Maybe, and again, regardless
of when. I do believe a time machine is achievable, but only to transmit data.
Data, not physical people back and forth into time.
That's correct. Now, what would an actual time machine allow us to do on the first leg of this, let's say? Right now, we have the X amount of time delay to Mars and back on communications. If we can shorten that up to instantaneous, okay, essentially we've pushed ourselves into a pseudo time advancement. Okay, now let's say we want to go back. Now, on that same principle, we've already been there and back. We could tap into the existing signal, which is already been. So we've gone back in time. So there we can get about a 3-minute delay there, forward and back, if you will.
We need a Doc Brown again from Back to the Future to try to pull this together for us.
Yep. So essentially what we're going to first attempt is string a rope, if you will. If we can string a rope into the future or into the past. Now, the rope can be any physical entity. Let's say it's particle ionization, it's particle communications, it's some type of link. It could be photon, emission, absorption, anything. That would be our physical link of which we can pass data across. Now, what good is that? Well, in a funny sort of way, let's say I'll be able to get the lottery numbers 128 milliseconds before they come out. You know, but we can, at least we have a beginning, you know, something that we can start playing around with the laws of time.
Now let me ask you, though, about time and with a restriction of time. Let's say 1,000 years from now, God knows what the technology will be like. It's beyond anything I can imagine.
Yeah.
Maybe then we can move humans back and forth in time. Possible?
Well, we're going to be getting up into that when I start getting up into the teleporter stuff.
Okay.
Okay, because I'm beginning with this one because this is kind of a lead-in. If number 10, I think number, go through my little list here, number 10, number 3, and number 2, as soon as we break through that particle thing, we can achieve all three.
All right, and we'll get to those. All right, so let's move on to number 9 then. The future of robotics you call living computers.
Right. Quantum computers. We're starting to get into a hive mentality type networking of computers. Pretty soon we will not need this big box and on your desk and all that. They'll all be tied together. Each one will be a separate component, no different than cells of a brain. The more computers that are added on there, the larger the brain, if you will, the more intelligent. It's essentially, let's say, Web 3. Web.3. As we start increasing the capability of these CPUs on these machines, we're going to start getting up into terahertz and exahertz range of our computers, the speed of which they can process. We call them G-flops, gigaflops, and on and on and on. The amount of processing, the amount of switching that can be accomplished in a billionth of a second. As we start getting up into those speeds, we're going to have different materials to create those frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
Because silicone breaks down at about 700 to 800 gigahertz. We will not be able to have a clocking mechanism, whether it's a computer that can go faster than that, with present elemental technology. We're starting to get into biotechnology, where we'll be actually using living tissues to create the clocking mechanisms for these computers. And no different than a hive of bees or all the synapses with our brains, we actually have living connections, these living computers.
See, what they're working on now, as you well know, is they're beginning to hook up chips to brains. Mm-hmm. They're beginning to help blind people by hooking up chips to their eyes. If we go to the point where we use organic material for this,
mm-hmm.
there's no question in my mind that we're going to be making cyborgs out of people.
Yes, indeed. And there's predictions cyborgs will be around at 2050. That seems to be the date that everybody's throwing at me. Now, what type of cyborgs? You know, we're not going to have a walking robot. First of all, what good is a walking robot? I mean, it'll be either rolling around or floating or just sitting there in a corner doing something, or your entire house will be the robot itself, or your entire building. Yes, indeed. We will be tied in with these devices. Okay.
What if, Jan, half my brain ended up being a huge organic computer? Half my brain.
Okay.
Would that make me a cyborg, do you think?
Yeah, I guess it would. Yes.
Okay.
There's a number of definitions on a cyborg, but yeah, that would be one of the definitions. That is correct. Now, it does not have to be within your brain. It could be attached to your brain. You could be plugged into something, and the combination of you and that device would be the cyborg itself. You would be the clocking mechanism, the actual thinking module, the computer, and that will lead us up to teleportation or telepresence operations, like where we could actually send these cyborgs to other planets, under the oceans, whatever else. We just plug into ourselves. And we're there. We have the telepresence. And what makes this, again, as I go through this, everything will seem to touch on 7 will attach to 2 and 5 will attach to 10 on this list. As we get into these telepresence systems, let's say you are now the cyborg, you're plugged into a probe or a module somewhere else, you will have sensory feedback. You will actually be able to hear, again, to our olfactory, smell.
It's like you're there.
Yeah, you will be there. Okay, so half of your brain? No, it would probably be all of your brain.
Remote viewing with technology.
That's correct. And again, to make sure, you know, it'll tie back into this time machine thing we were just discussing, to get rid of the 3-minute lag to Mars and back, you know, we can eliminate that through the rope in time, and we would have instantaneous sensory feedback of ourselves on Mars doing things, rolling around, touching, smelling, hearing, tasting, if you will, but I don't know how that's going to happen.
If you were on another planet and under this guise, some creature attacked you, this machine, would we feel the emotion of that?
No. Well, that would be within ourselves. The thing about robotic systems, I've been involved in that for over 30 years, a robot will go out and it'll do the job, but it does not have the ability to feel. You know, we get into this data thing.
At least not yet.
Not yet. We would feel, okay, as far as being attacked, you know, the self-preservation thing. But I think it would only be an emotional response on our end. Okay. I don't think we'd actually feel the pain or anything else. I don't think I want to put pain into the system.
No. Is there a downside to living computers?
Yeah, there probably would be. Okay, I don't want to get way out there, but, you know, I do most of my thinking out there.
Go outside the box, Jan.
Okay.
Have a good time.
All right. We go back to, again, the science fiction writers of computers taking over the world, taking over governments, taking over things, and yada, yada. A computer system that is that fast, tied together, handling financial operations around the world could create quite a mess if it wanted to. Sell short on certain currencies, it would take human intervention of some kind. But computers that are that fast, thinking basically on our level, tied together to so many systems in the hive, yeah, it could be a threat. But we, as humans, our initial goal is to survive, reproduce, and explore. We will put into these systems the ability to overpower that, I'm sure, to preserve ourselves against any of that. Now, beginning, that's up to the programmers. And again, when we get up to speeds that fast, the programming languages are something we can't even imagine today. We are going to have a whole new generation of programmers writing in languages that are packets, that are three-dimensional packets, that are the E8, if you will, composite dimensional software writing for these systems.
Before we talk about number 8, flying cars, let me ask you, on this list, why did you not include, because for me, I would have made it one of my top ones, future technology to communicate with the afterlife? Is that too far out?
No. You're not going to be dealing with an afterlife as such. Okay, again, I'm going outside. Okay, I've just jumped out of that box. My site, Tamashii, in Japanese, means soul. We've done a lot of research, a lot of evaluations and testing to where each individual, I think I've stated this before, has a specific biofrequency. In other words, it's no different than each one of us having our own fingerprint. We're that different from each other. When we pass on, this frequency still exists. Okay, it's within the universe. It's right. The intelligent universe.
Always was.
Always was, always will be, until the next little radio is born, which is individuals, us, to absorb these frequencies. The afterlife would be tapping into that individual frequency. Okay, can that be done? Well, when we get up to the living computers, if you will, if the clock speeds that fast, to be able to get up to the ectahertz range of which our biofrequencies exist in, I believe, again, we may be able to tap into that. I may be able to sit here, type in a frequency number of old Uncle Fred, and do some communication here. Again, we're back to the software thing. It's going to be in a language and an approach that, you know, you really have to stand back and look at today to say, this language for this software program to operate these systems to talk to all these various levels of dimensions, if you will, you're going to have to be in that range. We may actually have to plug ourselves again into these computers to physically or mentally write these programs. These programs may be the entire essence of an expert system, meaning the brain drain of an individual that actually wrote this program with his own essence.
So true. Next up, flying cars. They're already programming cars to drive themselves on program roads.
Yeah. I've been dealing with a couple programs. Actually, I have a patent pending coming out on a device that will actually enable a lot of this to work and communicate with the roadway and some other things.
Would that minimize accidents, Jan, entirely?
Not at home. Oh, boy. Hey, that's... You mean the flying car or the road?
The road.
That was...
Flying car, that's another problem.
That's the whole thing. You get in a flying car, do you need a driver's license or a pilot's license?
The poor guy on the road gets hit by a flying car that drops on him.
Yeah, he's on this great intelligent road and the car falls on him. So, eliminate accidents altogether. You know, you could say yes, 100%, but I never do that. I would give it about a 95% probability that we'd probably eliminate the normal accidents that we have today.
So if someone, God forbid, is driving drunk, which they shouldn't be,
the car wouldn't even let you drive drunk.
You couldn't even get in it.
Okay. You couldn't even get in.
But if the car drives itself, would it matter what kind of shape a person was in?
No, you wouldn't even be driving anymore. You'd just get in and
pass out.
The car would talk to you. Yeah, the car would talk to you. It would know who you are because of your. I don't want to say your RFID key, but essentially a transponder that you carry with you. And say, hey, George, where do you want to go today? And you say, oh, take me home. And it already knows where home is. That's pre-programmed, and it lays out the route and link and time factors and everything else, and away you go.
I do like this breathalyzer idea that your car, you have to breathe into your car or it won't start. I really think that should be mandatory for cars.
Yes, me too.
You know, it would minimize so many problems. And people who would be opposed to it thinking, hey, you know, they're taking more of our rights away. No, this is to protect us.
Well, when we start getting up in these talking cars, it's going to actually ask you, George, where do you want to go? Just on your speech pattern, it's going to know, first of all, if it's you. Second of all, if you're in the proper state to be actually driving or anything. There's going to be a number of factors received from your voice recognition.
Well, when you say the state that we would be driving, are we doing any driving at all, or is it all done by the car?
It's going to be, at first, it's going to be driving.
Okay.
At first. Because they're going to get the talking car, the voice recognition, the verification, and all that technology first. In fact, that's real close. The next would be the communication with the roadway, the roadbed. where once that takes place, then the automobile will be able to, say, drive itself.
A little like Knight Rider, huh?
Yeah. But before that's actually going to happen, you're going to have the automobiles are going to be equipped with anti-collision devices, you know, to determine proximity and all this stuff to make sure, you know, everybody's in the proper.
You just got to hope that malfunctions don't occur, because then that could be a disaster, couldn't it, Jan?
Well, yes, it could. Let's say, yeah, it really could.
Let's talk about flying cars when we come right back. Now we're getting into jets and stuff. We'll be back.